KMXT in Kodiak, this is the 25th anniversary edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery could kick off any minute now. The Fishing Company of Alaska has suddenly ceased operations. And can catch shares work if they're given to communities to divvy up among their fishermen? All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The Seattle-based Fishing Company of Alaska, which holds the largest quota for Atka mackerel in Alaska waters, ceased fishing suddenly this week. SeafoodNews.com is reporting the other companies that are part of the Alaska Seafood Co-op are still fishing, and operationally, this is not a time of the year when fishing companies would normally stand down. The Fishing Company of Alaska is believed to get operating capital from Asian partners, and it's reported that possible related operations in Sendai, Japan, have taken serious damage after the earthquake and tsunami. The Fishing Company of Alaska and its holding company operate five catcher processors in the Bering Sea. The fishing vessels Alaska Juris, Alaska Spirit, Alaska Victory, Alaska Voyager, and the Alaska Warrior. All of these vessels are currently tied up. They normally fish for Atka mackerel, yellowfin sole, and other species. In 2010, the company employed 458 people. In addition, there are industry reports that longtime managers of the company have been told they'll be laid off at the end of this month. Environmental officials with state and federal agencies say there is no risk of radiation exposure from Alaska seafood and do not expect Alaska seafood catch to be affected by radiation released from damaged nuclear reactors in northern Japan following this month's devastating earthquake and tsunami. Spokesperson for the U.S. Food and Drug Administration says at this time, theoretical models do not indicate that significant amounts of radiation will reach the U.S. or affect U.S. fishing waters. The FDA says the great quantity of water in the Pacific Ocean rapidly and effectively dilutes radioactive material, so fish and seafood are likely to be unaffected. Kristen Ryan, director of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Division of Environmental Health, says her department randomly screened samples of Alaska seafood catch for contaminants such as heavy metals, PCBs, and pesticides, but is not currently testing for radiation. About 2 weeks into the season, halibut prices have tumbled from opening highs of $7 a pound. Lainey Welch of Fish Radio is reporting Kodiak prices between $5 and $5.75 a pound, depending on size. Southeast fishermen are getting between $5.50 and $6.50, and Homer deliveries fetching $6 to $6.50. Retail prices in Anchorage stores were between $18 and $19 per pound. Herring fishermen are standing by in Sitka for what is forecast to be a record sacro harvest of over 18,000 tons, but as of midweek, test samples were showing only 0.5% mature roe. Because of the low percentage in four samples taken through Tuesday, fish and game managers were holding off on more testing until Friday unless changes in fish distribution or other information prompts them to sample earlier. Fishermen and others interested in the fishery, it is, after all, somewhat of a spectator sport in Sitka, can get updates on the Fish and Game website or on the Recordophone hotline at 747-1009.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
Gooey ducks are known in Chinese cultures as elephant trunk clams because of their elongated necks, which can grow to over 3 feet long. Farming of the strange-looking clam with a funny name is an $80 million a year industry in British Columbia and Washington State, where gooey ducks grow wild. Now, Homer representative Paul Seaton would like to see them grown in communities along the Gulf of Alaska. KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports.
House Bill 60 is Representative Paul Seaton's third attempt to push through legislation allowing for the farming of gooey ducks in coastal communities on the Gulf of Alaska. The very large burrowing clams already grow wild in some parts of southeast Alaska and are farmed for profit in British Columbia and Washington State, where they currently sell for about $15 a pound. Seaton would like to see the same sort of economic boost in Gulf communities.
It's got great potential for private individuals and coastal communities and villages around, I think, the Gulf of Alaska.
Seaton says the impetus of the bill comes from the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward, the only facility in Alaska that supplies geoduck seed. Because of fish and game regulations that prohibit the farming of a species in an area where that species does not already grow wild, potential geoduck farmers in the Gulf of Alaska were prevented from getting permits, and the hatchery had few buyers for its geoduck seed. Seaton says it took a lot of convincing, but fish and game officials now approve of his bill.
There's no known diseases there in muddy bottoms so that they won't be in the same habitat that would be other clam species that are utilized, such as razor clams that are in a high energy beach and or hard shell clams, which are in a cobble beach. These are in muddy bottoms and there's no known conflict. We're not taking an animal that doesn't exist within the same pretty much identical ecosystem except for water temperature. I think everybody has now done enough analysis and research and all that they're pretty confident that this could provide a new economic base for coastal Alaska communities without having much potential for unintended consequences.
It's thought that Gulf of Alaska waters are too cold for geoducks to breed, but not too cold for them to survive.
You know, their native range is from Washington up through British Columbia and Southeastern. So even though they're not going to be a breeding population, that's just fine for a farmer. And so we shouldn't have any material conflicts between a wild stock that doesn't exist and a farm product.
The bill would open geoduck farming only in Gulf of Alaska communities and only in subtidal areas.
We wanted to make sure that the bill was going to avoid any possible conflicts with subsistence use or where people go sport harvesting of clams and where they land their boats and all that kind of stuff, as well as the problem of the further north you go, you can have, you get freezing on the beaches and all, so you avoid that potential of mortality and things as well.
House Bill 60 now heads to the Senate, where Seaton expects hearings to be scheduled in the near future. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
For the third time in 5 years, Alaska's congressional delegation is introducing legislation that would protect Alaska's fishing permits from liens. The Maritime Lien Reform Act of 2011 failed to get enough support in the House and Senate in both 2006 and 2008. If passed, it would protect fishermen's livelihoods by allowing them to continue to work and pay their debts in times of financial hardship. Bob King is an aide to Senator Mark Begich.
Over the years, the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission has taken a number of steps to make sure that fishing permits aren't subject to lien or attachment in the courts. A fishing permit is a use privilege. It's not a piece of property. And, our interest is we want to keep fishing permits in the hands of fishermen. This legislation comes in response to a court ruling that actually found that permits may be vulnerable to maritime liens in certain cases. And this bill would fix that. It removed the threat, preserve the ability for fishermen to keep fishing, to work their way out of any problems they may be in.
Congressman Don Young called the act a win-win for fishermen, creditors, and Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski described it as imperative to keep fishermen on the water to earn a living and pay back their creditors. Alaska law already protects limited entry permits from liens. The Maritime Lien Reform Act will protect them on a federal level.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
A plan for community catch share programs in fisheries nationwide was unveiled in Washington, D.C. last week by a panel of fishermen and environmentalists. Brought together by EcoTrust, an environmental investment think tank in Oregon, the National Panel on Community Dimensions of Fisheries Catch Share Programs sought to present a framework on how communities can benefit from catch share fisheries management. EcoTrust is recommending a catch share system where communities are given the quota to various fisheries to split up among its resident fishermen. Paul Parker, the director of the Cape Cod Fisheries Trust, was one of the panelists at the announcement.
I'm here to really speak to the potential for community ownership. Just like you would own a municipal pier, many of the piers on Cape Cod are municipally owned. They're not an asset that the fishermen themselves could afford to own, maintain, or keep in the long term. We see quota very similarly, which is that it's very difficult for small-scale fishermen, especially new entrants in our community, to afford to own quota on their own. And so by having community-owned quota that's owned in trust for the long haul, that's accessible to those fishermen, we think we can put a major stopgap in the way of some of the social concerns that people have raised about catch shares.
Astrid Scholes of EcoTrust says there may be ways to include processors in the community shares program.
We don't want to get into the whole pro and con on processor shares. I mean, the point is that there are very interesting opportunities once you take a community economic development lens to this question. And we at EcoTrust are working with several community fishing associations that are contemplating business models that bring processors to the table, which may seem like a heretical thing to say. And yet, when you look forward in the industry, when you look ahead to future generations and creative approaches to resilient communities, there are some interesting ways to go.
She said the panel is calling on NOAA to invest in the research and development of new community business models and support public and private financing that promote community catch shares. The full report is available online at ecotrust.org. Research is continuing to find ways to prevent marine mammals from getting caught in fishing gear. The problem can be separated into a couple categories: scavenging whales and seals that help themselves to fish caught in gear, and marine mammals such as porpoises that accidentally become entangled, or whales that stumble into nets. Kodiak-based Associate Professor Kate Wynn of the University of Alaska Fairbanks has been researching the problem.
So ultimately, everyone's going to benefit if we can figure out how not to catch marine mammals. In 30 years of working with marine mammal fishery interactions, I've never met any person that wants to catch a whale.
She says there are a suite of options fishermen can use, and her research last summer looked at the effectiveness of different methods.
The most creative one that I liked was the bottle rockets. They were the most fun to have to go buy and test, of course. Where you take a bottle rocket, we actually tape a plastic clamp onto a boat hook. You light it, and you stick it in the water a couple feet down and shoot it off. Okay? And you can hear this loud pop above water. The second thing was a set of pipes. And some people said that they would put pipes over the side and bang on them. And it seemed to alert the whales that were coming near their net to turn around and leave. Some people said they take chains, whatever's handy in their skiff, and they bang the chains on the side of the boat. And that seemed to work.
Wynn's research continues this summer when she plans to test beacons that emit low-frequency sounds designed to warn marine mammals of net hazards. Well, through dead reckoning, divination, and best guess wild speculation, we've calculated this to be the 25th anniversary of the Alaska Fisheries Report. The actual date of the first show is lost in the mists of time and aging memories. In honor of our silver anniversary year, we'll have on the air as many former hosts as we can find and remember some of the big events in fisheries in Alaska in the last quarter century.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. On the web at amsea.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from Seafood.com's John Sacton, KFSK's Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Fish Radio's Lainey Welch in Kodiak, KBBI's Aaron Selbig in Homer, and KMXT's Jacob Resnick in Kodiak. Also from KMXT in Kodiak, celebrating 25 years of the Fish Show, I'm Jay Barrett.